I wanted to finish the discussion of the Shemitah system in Noach and also add a few more mitzvahs that aren't on the list, and why aren't they on the list? I'm not sure. Did anyone remember the last one we talked about? I think the last one was Avraham and Chaya. Okay, so we have, thank you. So we have belief in Hashem. We have the prohibition against blasphemy, against cursing Hashem. We have the prohibition against murder, Shri'ishastamim. The prohibition against Giloy Arayos, which are sexual offenses. The prohibition. I have them all here. Yes, we have Avodah Zarah, we have Birchas Hashem, Shvichas Damim, Gilui Arayos, that's four. Aver Menachai is five. One second. Why are we missing one here? One second. Oh, Gezel. Gezel is sick. Birch Hashem is blasphemy. You know, cursing. We call it Birch Hashem because we use a euphemism, but it's actually a blasphemy. Gezel is theft. So that's six. Okay. Now the seventh one is really the most interesting in terms of trying to understand it. The seventh one is called dinim, laws. What are laws? What do you mean laws? What mitzvah is laws? So there's a big, big machlokas. The Rambam and the Ramban, how to understand the seventh commandment of Dinim. According to Rambam, according to Maimonides, according to Rambam, the mitzvah of Dinim is an obligation on Noahide societies, meaning non-Jewish societies, to establish a court system to punish people who violate the other six laws. So in other words, it's not enough just to have six commandments that they're supposed to keep. There has to be a system in place. And in fact, the Rambam says, therefore, that if a non-Jewish society does not punish the wrongdoers by a system of justice, even if they haven't violated the other six, they are guilty of violating the seventh because they have not established a court system to punish the yechidim who violate the six. And in fact, this is how the Rambam understands a difficult maisa later on. We're going to read later in Chumash Bereishis of the story of Shechem. Right? Shechem rapes Dinah and wants to marry her. So Shimon and Levi come up with a proposal telling the city of Shechem, the whole city of Shechem, that if you circumcise and you do a bris milah, we'll be able to have our sister marry you. So the whole city, all the men in the city, they undergo circumcision. For an adult, that can make you very sick and it's quite painful. So on the third day, when they were at their weakest and they were vulnerable, Shimon and Levi eradicated the entire city. Remember, that's the story in the Torah. Now, Yaakov was not too happy about that. Yaakov basically said that we're a small group of people and you're kind of endangering us. And even on Yaakov's deathbed, he did curse Shimon and Levi for their anger and for their behaving improperly. But the Rambam says that Yaakov did not say what they did was halachically wrong. Yaakov said, you shouldn't have done it, the timing wasn't good, we're too vulnerable. But Yaakov did not consider them murderers. But what was their justification? I mean, they murdered a lot of innocent people. The Rambam writes, a big chiddush, that the entire city was chayev misa. Because although it was only Shechem that raped Dinah, but the rest of the city did not judge the wrongdoer. And because they did not judge the wrongdoer, the entire city, at least the adult men, let's say, the adult men, were guilty of the seventh Noahide law, and the seventh Noahide law is Dinah. And again, any violation of Noahide law is a chi of Misa, even theft, by the way. I'll talk about that, what that means. So that's a tremendous chiddush. Now, this is how the Rambam understands the mitzvah of Dinim. Ramban understands the mitzvah of Dinim a different way. And he says, Dinim is an obligation. In other words, the Torah gives six basic laws. You know, worship Hashem, don't blaspheme, don't steal, don't murder, don't cut limbs off animals when they're alive, etc. But society needs many other laws as well. It needs to have environmental protection, minimum wage laws, no child labor laws. So dinim is Hashem kind of saying, in addition to these minimum laws that I've given you, non-Jewish societies are supposed to pass other types of laws that improve society, and if they pass those laws, society is obligated to obey them, right? So in a sense, what this is doing is, quite amazingly, it is putting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's stamp of approval on these secular laws that are enacted to make society better. In other words, like this, according to the way the Ramban understands it, let's say a non-Jewish society, now what about a Jewish society? That's a good question. But let's say a non-Jewish society passes a law that says children cannot work below the age of 16. Okay, a child labor law. Or let's say a non-Jewish society passes an environmental protection law. You're not allowed to pollute. Now, technically, it is not one of the seven commandments of Noah not to pollute or not to have children work. But via dinim, any law for the improvement of society that a secular government enacts is halachically binding on the non-Jew under the Noahide code. In effect, the same way we say about Jewish people, dina de malchus adina, the law of the land is binding on a Jew. It's almost a kal vachomer. The law of the land is certainly binding on a non-Jew, because according to the Ramban, that would become the mitzvah of dinim. You see the difference? In other words, according to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, dinim is not adding any new obligations. The only obligations that God put on the Noahites is the six commandments of Noah, and the only thing the seventh commandment is adding is create a court system that enforces the other six. So no new chiyuv is created. It is simply a chiyuv to enforce that which is in the other six. Masha'enken, according to Ramban, it is creating an obligation on a society to try to improve. Now, the question becomes, this only applies to laws that are for the improvement of society. What about things like taxes? You know, what about things that don't improve society? What about things that make society worse? You know, obviously, a secular law that permits abortion would not be considered to be a mitzvah, because under the Noahide code, abortion is prohibited, right? So you wouldn't say that. But these are general social welfare. So this is a big, big machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. What is the tochen of the seventh commandment that is called dinim laws?
So then defeat the Ramban, if you were to violate the child labor law, would you be called mitzvah?
Yes, yes. So that's a fascinating question. And then let me go back a little bit and talk about this generally. I had mentioned in passing, and I saw some surprising eyes, that any violation of a Noahide law by a non-Jew, Chayiv Misa, you get the death penalty. And in fact, it is brought down in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that you don't need two witnesses. Even one witness could get a guy, and of course the witness could be a guy, he doesn't have to be a Trevor Davis, a Jew, so even if you have an iPhone, you're kosher to be a witness in a Noahide tribunal, although you would certainly be puzzled in a Sanhedrin. And not only that, but you don't need warning. Under Jewish law, in order to put a Jew to death for Chilul Shabbos, the Jew has to be warned ahead of time, don't do this or you'll get killed. And not only that, but the Jew has to acknowledge the warning by saying, I heard you, but I don't care. And among other reasons, that's why it was very, very rare that people were executed. You remember the Mishnah in Makos that says that if a Sanhedrin kills somebody once every 7 years, and according to one opinion, once every 70 years, that was called a bloody court. In other words, the Torah deliberately creates a dinei nefashos, capital punishment system, that is going to be very rarely employed. It's mainly there to scare you. It's mainly there to make you realize how chomer averos are. But it was not intended. God forbid, the Jewish law was never intended to be a Taliban where everybody was getting executed. But when it comes to the Noahide court system, you could be executed for anything. Now, think about this for a moment, because it's very, very strange. I understand maybe capital punishment for murder, but let's take theft. Let's take theft. I steal an apple from a fruit stand. Not I'm a Jew, but let's say a non-Jew steals an apple from a fruit stand. He's over on Gezel. Gezel is one of the seven Noahide laws. He could be executed. Little difficult. Now, not only that, but what age? This is another kind of a side point the Chassam Sofer makes. The Chassam Sofer makes, we know that in Jewish law, for Jews, there's a certain age of majority when you become an adult. It's pretty young. You become an adult at 13. And if you're Mechalel Shabbos at 12 and a half, you could not be put to death or get Malkus or any other punishment. But if you do it at 13, if a girl does it at 12, there's an age of majority. What is the age of majority for Noahites, for Goyim? Do Goyim have bar mitzvahs, so to speak, in terms of liability? So the Chassam Sofer says a very interesting chiddush. The Chassam Sofer says there is no definite age of majority for non-Jews. It depends on how mature and intelligent the child is. So according to the Chassam Sofer, unlike Jewish law, where no matter how smart and understanding you are at the age of 12, you're not chayev until you're 13. Under the Noahide law, an 8-year-old might be chayev misa, if he really understands what he's doing is wrong. And maybe a 15-year-old wouldn't, a 20-year-old might not be chayev misa if he doesn't really understand. So, imagine this. You have, I'm giving you examples of non-Jews, obviously. You're a non-Jew, you have a non-Jewish kid, very bright, genius, he really understands everything, but he's a bit of a kleptomaniac. So he walks by some candy store, and when nobody's looking, he takes a Hershey bar or whatever it is. According to the Chassam Sofer, if he understands what he's doing, he could be punished. And what is the Noahide punishment for gezeila? Theft. So the question is, it's really a hard question. Does the Torah really envision that a non-Jewish society, via the mitzvah of dinim, is supposed to create a system? I know that's not your question. I'll get to the extra about your question about the. But let's talk about the Noahide laws themselves. So here there is a chiddush that is brought down. Not too many Svarim say it, because it's a very disturbing kasha, and I wish we could find a makor in Rishayim that say this chiddush. I would feel much better about it. But there is a chiddush that a few Achronim say, Chelkas Yoav, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and they say the following. They say that when the halacha says that the punishment for the Noahide laws is death, that does not mean that's a mandatory punishment. It basically means Hashem leaves to the Noahide court system the determination of what punishment they want to impose, and they could even impose a death sentence. Now, the Torah basically says whatever they think they need. Unlike the Torah, where Jews have specific punishments, Hashem is essentially saying whatever they think they need, they can do, but it doesn't have to be the maximum. Well, that's a little comforting in the sense that that would mean, therefore, if a society would say, for example, that for theft, either you go to jail or you just pay, that would be permissible. They don't have to enact death. On the other hand, that also means the Taliban is permissible, because they could say, you know, we want to kill. But at least it makes it not mandatory. Okay. Now, all of this is talking about death penalties for the six Noahide laws. But your question is a very excellent question. What about, according to Ramban, when the non-Jewish societies pass new laws, environmental protection, minimum wage, and they become part of the obligation via the mitzvah of dinim? Does that also carry a death penalty? Meaning to say, if I pollute, not I, again, this wouldn't be for a Jew, but a non-Jew. If a non-Jew pollutes, could he be put to death? So that's a very, very good question. But here I think we could be machalic. We could be machalic, and that is that the idea of death penalty is only for the commandments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded. The commandments that are added by society with Hashem's Rishus, they can add whatever punishment they want. Since they're the ones who are creating the mitzvah, they could be majbil, they could limit the punishment. That's, I think that is true misvara, although I don't have 100% raya for that. So it's entirely possible for a society to say that the punishment for polluting is a fine, and that would not be a violation of the Noahaita. Yeah.
The question becomes then, who's responsible for carrying
animals? Yes, yes, excellent question, excellent question.
Because Shem and, yep. and Levi weren't even based in according to Jewish
That's correct, sense. That's correct. So that brings us to a new question, and that is, let us assume that the penalty for the Noahide laws can be as chomer as death. Does that mean anybody can administer that? Because I keep in mind, Shimon and Levi, right? The Rambam is trying to explain why Shimon and Levi were able to kill the city of Shechem. And the Rambam explains because the city of Shechem were in violation of the Noahide mitzvah to have a court system. Okay, but who's Shimon and Levi to do that? Shimon and Levi are not judges. Shimon and Levi are not a Beis Din. Shimon and Levi are vigilantes. So is the suggestion that I, as a Jew, if I see a non-Jewish person violating Noahide law, such as stealing, just stealing, I'm not even talking about murder. Now, I'm not talking about rodev. I'm not talking about, you know, killing, that's a separate thing. Killing the guy that's going to kill me, kill somebody. That's bad language here. But I'm talking about the person who's violating Noahide law. Let's say he's committing adultery. Let's say he's stealing. Let's say he's cutting off Abram and Achai. Right? Am I allowed to kill him? A court could sentence him to death. We don't have those courts today that much. So that's a big machlokes. From the Rambam, the implication is vigilantism is permissible to enforce the Noahide code. But I've seen that it's a very, very scary idea. In fact, someone wrote a book. I mentioned this before. There's a sefer. Actually, it's a very interesting sefer because he goes to a lot of makaris. It was called Toras HaMelech, which basically talks about the heterum that you have to kill non-Jews when they're doing different things. Putting aside besides a Moloch, but even if they're not a Moloch, under the Noahide law, you know, you could kill them for this and that and that and that and that. And it was a safer, and it needed to be discussed simply because the Makairis are murky. And as an area of halacha, again, this is not one of those things that you're giving a practical halacha lemaisa share. You know, nobody is saying to do this. But, you know, we're discussing the possibilities. But I have to say that the Mechabrim got in big, big trouble. The police arrested them, and they were undergoing investigation. Some great Rabbanim, who gave paskamas, were schlepped into the Attorney General's office, whatever it is. So it's something that we cannot talk about a lot. But I will tell you that a lot of poskim do differ with the Rambam on this prat. And they say that even if there's a chi of Misa, you have to have a court system. And the analogy would be, again, look at it in terms of Jewish law. If a person is mechalal Shabbos b'farhesya, even with witnesses who gave a warning, even b'zman ha-mikdash, an individual would not be permitted to kill him. You would need a Sanhedrin of 23. Right? You understand this? There's no halacha that I can kill a guy. In fact, even for murder, I can't do that. I can kill a person to prevent him from committing murder. But if he murdered, even if I'm a Goel Adam, it's important to know, the Goel Adam cannot kill until a Sanhedrin adjudicated somebody. So if that's true for a Jew, the swara would be that might be equally true for a non-Jew. But I have to admit, according to the Mashmos of the Rambam, if Shimon and Levi went ahead and did it without a Beis Din, without any authority, then the Rambam would seem to endorse anybody could enforce the Noahide.
The question, though, was on the other side. Let's say, assume you do need a Beis Din. Is that a Goyish Beis Din?
No, it's a Goyish Beis Din. That much is true. That much is true because the Rambam says that the mitzvah of Dinim is that non-Jews are supposed to create their court system. Now, the Rambam does say, and this I think everybody would agree with, that if non-Jews have failed to do that and they're under the power of the Jewish people, like in Eretz Israel, a Jewish Beis Din can try them. And that's true. But that's still not the same as a guy in the street, you know, taking justice into his own hands. But the Rambam is mashma that he could. You know, yeah.
In which case, why do you need the dinim of... why do you need all these dinim? Why not just say right that they kidnapped a Jewish woman and that there's...
The reason was that if they would have killed the city to get Dina back, perhaps that would have been correct. But remember, Dina was raped. Dina was released. Dina was in the Dina was already hung. Dina was in the custody of her family. So the idea of Rodev, unless you're going to start saying, well, they'll do it in the future, but that's too speculative. I mean, Shechem had a particular longing for this particular person. So to apply Rodev, that wouldn't work. They were not being punished for future danger. They were being punished for what they already did, and that's where you get the problem of vigilantism. Yeah.
If that's the case, that the vigilante could kill a goy for breaking one law,
according to the Rambam,
why would he say that is?
Huh?
Why would you say that is?
Basically, the Rambam says that since the Noahide violation does not need two witnesses, does not need warning, so the procedural rules that apply to a Jew don't apply to a non-Jew. But why would there be such a loosening? It is hard to understand. But apparently, the violation of the Noahide laws are so destructive that it's like a cancer. Anyone who could stop it in any way is supposed to stop it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very extreme position. And again, I want to be clear that I'm not advocating that you apply this position halachically. It would not be appropriate, and indeed it could endanger many other lives as well, which is another. That actually was Yaakov's taina. Yaakov's taina, ultimately, if you think about it, is Yaakov did not taina. This is what the Rambam is saying. Yaakov didn't say halachically they were wrong. Yaakov said it was a bad thing to do because you are endangering our lives in this community. And that identically, much more so actually, would certainly apply here. So one has to make a cheshbon not to endanger Jewish lives because you want to fulfill your zealousness in enforcing the seven commandments of Noah.
By Jewish.
I mean the age of adulthood, you mean?
That is also, like we say 13 and 12, it's also psychological. The time we say that, like a 13 is also in terms of psychology, it's important to us.
Yes.
Why can't we apply that to Goyim?
You absolutely would. But the Chassam Sefer just says it's not going to be a one-size-fit-all age. That's all he's saying. In other words, the Noahide court, would make an individual judgment. In other words, you're right. It may be on the average kid until he's 13 would not be responsible, but the Chassam Sefer says there can be exceptions. And he's by the way, Lahavdil, in existing secular law, you have a similar thing. Sometimes you hear about these little kids who commit murder, and a decision is made sometimes to try them as an adult. Although it's not so much based on maturity, it's based often on how bad the crime is. But this idea of trying a minor as an adult cannot exist under Jewish law, except for Ben Sora Mora, which is one unusual case that never happened according to the Gemara. But generally speaking, in halacha, there is no concept that a minor could be punished as an adult until he's an adult. But under the Noahide law, the Chassam Sefer says such a concept does exist.
So in a Noahide society, do they have priests and rabbis to teach them?
Yes, so this is the important thing. Ultimately, a Noahide society is supposed to develop its own poskim, its own rabbis, non-Jews, who are experts in the Noahide laws. But until such time as this exists, they do have to go to Jewish rabbis. And indeed, there are Jewish rabbis who kind of have specialized a little bit in Noahide law. I knew a rabbi, I think I had mentioned, that on Shabbos, he was a rabbi of a shul. He ministered to the Jews. And every Sunday, he would minister to the Gentiles. He would have a prayer service for the Noahides. Again, Chas v'Shalom, it wasn't to Yashka, it was to Hashem. And he would encourage. Now, prayer is not mandatory for Noahites. It's not one of the seven mitzvahs, but still, it's a good thing because it strengthens their emunah and the like, and he actually taught them that. Now, let me mention two other laws that non-Jews are not supposed to do, but they're not listed in the Seven Commandments. And it's interesting why they're not listed, because they are prohibitions. One is, Goy Sheshavas chayav misa. If a non-Jew keeps Shabbos, they are deserving of death. Now that doesn't mean they actually get killed, they say, but at least in Hashem's book, they are deserving of death. A goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Now, that's an interesting thing. That means, for example, practically, if you are a goy and you are even converting to Judaism and you're in the middle of a conversion process and you want to, keep Shabbos, to learn how to keep Shabbos, you are obligated to do something that violates Shabbos. It can't be 100%. You turn on the bathroom light once, etc. Of course, you know the old story about the very, very Haredi guy. He was in a conversion process, and he was very, very stark and very, very machmir. And he was very meticulous in keeping a Hilchos Shabbos, like all of the chumras and the like. So one of his chaverim went over to him and said, "You know, you think you're so frum, but you know you're actually violating your obligation, because you are not allowed to keep Shabbos. You have to be Mechal Shabbos." He says, "Don't worry, I carry in the Erev." Okay. So anyway, so he considered that to be a Chilul Shabbos. But okay. Anyway. I'll raise a question with Avram, but again, the question is just, why isn't that counted as one of the seven commandments? So the Mefarshim explained very, very nice that the prohibition of a guy keeping Shabbos is because he's stealing the gift that Hashem gave to Am Yisrael. And consequently, we don't have to mention it as a separate commandment, because it is really a subcategory of the prohibition of theft. It is theft of the national treasure. Shabbos is our national treasure, and that's why a guy should not keep Shabbos. By the same token, it mentions, and this also raises a lot of questions, and I'm sure you've probably had some of these questions. People ask me this a lot. That is, the Gemara says a non-Jew is not allowed to learn Torah, because it says, Torah siva lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us the Torah. Morasha kihilas Yaakov, an inheritance to the congregation of Yaakov. And there are actually two different Isurim. It's very interesting. There are two different Gemaras. One Gemara says the non-Jew is not allowed to learn Torah. The other Gemara says a Jew is not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah. So there are two different prohibitions here. There's a prohibition on the goy to learn, even on his own. And there's a prohibition on the Jew to teach. Now, this raises millions, not millions, there's a whole bunch of questions. I mean, so if my non-Jewish friend, asks me, why I don't go in a car on Shabbos, am I allowed to explain it and the like? So I'm not going to go through all the shittas here. I just want to give you a bottom line. The bottom line basically is that you are allowed to teach a goy, and a goy can learn the written Torah, the stories of the Bible. And in fact, that might even be desirable, because they learned that Hashem created the world and the like. Number two, you are allowed to tell them basic halacha. You're allowed to tell them we don't drive because we don't use electricity on Shabbos or the like. So what is really prohibited, the shayrish of the real prohibition, is to go into the in-depth Torah Shebal Peh aspect, such as going through Gemara, Tosfos, going through Rishonim, meaning to say, you can explain basic Jewish practices. And in fact, it's even a Kiddush Hashem. You explain, what Jews do, and that could be a Kiddush Hashem. But you don't go into the Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos, so you don't go into the different ideas of Rambam and Ramban. You don't do it Be'im. Now, even there, we have a Machlokas. Does this even apply if somebody is preparing for conversion? I mean, we have people in our Sameach who are preparing for conversion. They come to yeshiva. They go to a regular Gemara shiur. Is that considered to be permissible? That is a machlokas haposkim. There are some poskim would be machmer on it. Other poskim are makel. Obviously, the psak we're working with here is we are lenient. But in terms of your neighbor who is not converting, rest assured you are permitted to explain basic things, but don't sit down and learn a piece of Gemara with them. Yeah. Okay, so that's an excellent question. So the question is, it can happen a lot of ways. I'm teaching a class and a non-Jewish guy, walks in. Do I have to stop? course, in college campuses, half the people who go are not Jewish because maybe they have a Jewish father and a non-Jewish Jewish mother, and they didn't convert. You post things online, you give a radio share, or an online share, or whatever it would be. Obviously, there'll be a lot of non-Jews listening. So there we have a different lumdus of heter, and the heter is when you're delivering things to mixed audiences, your kavana is to teach the Jews. The non-Jews happen to hear. That's not the same thing as targeting.
There's no limitation on what you teach in that case?
In that case, there is no limitation. In fact, around 70 years ago, maybe 60 or 70 years ago, there was a great rabbi in Elizabeth, New Jersey, Rabbi Pinchas Teitz, and this is before there was an internet, but he pioneered, he gave a weekly daf Gemara shir on the radio. That was the as high tech as they had in those days. And people raised the question, hey, how are you allowed to teach on the radio? There'll be plenty of non-Jews that'll be listening. And the heter basically was, when you're throwing out your Torah to the undifferentiated audience, you could say you're mechaveh to reach the Jew, even if the Jew is the minority. That's your kavana. You're not targeting it to the non-Jew. And then we don't have any restrictions. Yeah.
Going back to the spam and setting up a
yep.
system. So one opinion was that they when it says up to killing the person for transgressing, that meant that there was a range that they could.
That's where Rav Soloveitchik is chiddush. Yeah.
Right.
That's
so
correct.
Then the question was raised. Like,
so why did they take
what if they just say like the punishment is no punishment?
That's an excellent point. If they would simply say no punishment, that is not a range, that is simply abdication of responsibility, so that wouldn't be justifiable. The question is, how small a punishment would be acceptable within the range? Let's say they say, we're going to tap your right finger once with the pen. I don't have an answer. In other words, it seems clear that there has to be a real punishment. And at what point would it just be such a joke that it wouldn't count? I don't know. But one thing is clear, if there's no punishment at all, that would clearly be a violation.
So then is the halacha of din not like, you have to make a din, but you have to make a din that's considered a din? Like,
I think so. In other words, maybe the standard would be enough of a punishment that it would scare people or deter people from committing the violation. That could be a fine, that could be a different thing, but something that's so small that it wouldn't stop anybody who wanted to do it, that may not have a din of a punishment at all.
And it would be based on a perspective, because what if let's say in India, right, if you kill somebody, then you have to eat a cow. But like, that's obviously not like for us, it's like nothing, right. But to them it's like terrible. So do we also include that into the creation of goods?
I think so. If it works for that society, it works. If it works, that's what they said with Islamic terrorists. They said that the best way to stop it would be that when they're arrested, you make them eat pork or something like that. They would not. That would stop them from doing those things. Okay, I got to stop it anyway. Take care.